So Rockwell is on vacation again, which is good for him. He needs vacations. We all need vacations. I'm not jealous or anything. So this week we have friend of the show, Drew, joining us. And I thought it'd be interesting to talk to Drew because when I ran across Drew again, maybe it was last year or what hasn't really been that long. It was kind of like worlds colliding. I'll kind of tell that story in a bit, but first, welcome, Drew.
How's it going? Happy to be here.
So, as of right now, Drew is the designer at 365 Degree Total Marketing. I think you just got that job, right?
Yeah, this is literally my fourth week on the job.
Awesome. And what are you doing there?
So they hired me on as a designer. My first project was a publication for a Chamber of Commerce community in Georgia. So, you know, 32-page booklet with kind of almost kind of a magazine feel to it.
Gotcha. And what were you doing before that?
Before that, I was working with a company in Macon called Third Wave Digital. I started out with them as a video production intern and ended up as their junior developer working with Cold Fusion, HTML, CSS, and jQuery. But then I found these guys over here on the coast, and they were pretty adamant to get me on the team. So
that's awesome.
Here I am. Yeah.
And you've also recently started working for me at Design Collective as a junior dev on a contract role, and that's been pretty awesome. So to get back to that story, I guess, I don't know how many years ago it was now, but we used to play in different bands and we'd play shows together. And I think that's how I originally met you.
Yeah, it was somewhere between like 2010, 2011, I think.
Yeah.
The kind of music scene in the town we both lived in was going.
Yeah, yeah. So we met, I think we didn't even really hang out back then. We just would see each other at shows. I knew of you, but we weren't running in the same circle maybe. And so you actually were doing tattoo work back then, as you obviously know, and you tattooed one half of my arm. So I have a sleeve on my left arm and half of it you did, and then the other half my friend here in Santa Cruz did. But yeah, so anyway, I was leaving the band I was in to move to California to take my first real dev job. And you finished up my sleeve. And then I remember we played our farewell show and I had saran wrap on my arm and it really sucked. It was really...
Yeah, I remember you saying something to the effect of, hey, I need to get this done because I'm moving to California in a couple weeks.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, you did, I think it was like a 7-hour session and then an 8-hour session. And it was like, it was done.
Yeah, it was a lot of work.
So, yeah, so I was living in Athens, Georgia at the time. And so you did the first, all the outlines in one sitting. I drove home to Athens, which was a couple hours away or a few hours away. And took the saran wrap and all stuff off and jumped right into the shower. And it was a mistake. It was a hot shower. it was a bad mistake. But yeah, so fast forward however many years, it must have been 5 years or something like that, maybe.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah, and I don't even remember how we got back in touch, but you had started doing, I think you were doing your video production work and things like that, and you're doing, I think you kind of always have done, you obviously in the tattooing world, you were doing a lot of drawing and stuff. Had you been doing graphic design that whole time as well, or did you sort of stumble into that along the way?
I had kind of been doing it. I played in some bands as well. So I did a couple of t-shirt designs and some album artwork here and there. Straight out of high school, my game plan was to be a graphic designer. And I lived in South Georgia, so there was like no way for me to really pursue that without, you know, moving hours and hours away, which I just never had the money to do back then. So I kind of fell backwards into tattooing for, ended up being about a 7-year career.
Mm-hmm.
But like in the back of my head, I was always watching, one of my biggest inspirations as a designer was Johnny Cupcakes. I saw one of his t-shirts that From First to Last was wearing in like 2008 or something like that.
Oh man.
Yeah, it's a big throwback. But it was always like in the back of my head. So towards the end of my tattoo career, it just never really panned out for me the way it has for some other people. I have some friends in the industry that are, you know, just absolutely killing it with the quality of work they're doing and, you know, the amount of money they're making for it. And I think my quality got up there, but for whatever reason, I just never really built the clientele.
Mm-hmm.
So when my wife or my girlfriend, now wife, started talking about, you know, getting married and wanting to have a kid or, you know, multiple kids and a house and all that stuff, like, I just kind of had to take a hard look at where I was in that career. And I've, you know, it didn't take long for me to realize that doing that wasn't going to allow me to give her what I wanted to. So I lucked up and met someone who worked at Third Wave who got me into an internship. And around that same time, I put myself through design school.
Gotcha. Okay. So I've always kind of touted that, like, the programming world or the tech world has always been really helpful to me. And it seems to me, like, in general, you can find a group of people that want to help you. And from my observations, I've spent a good amount of time in tattoo shops and talking to different tattooers. Like, my current tattoo artist, Adrian, we've talked a lot about this, but it seems completely the opposite, right? So it felt to me like in the tattoo world, and I want you to confirm this if this is true, but it felt to me like in the tattoo world, it was different, right? So if you wanted to learn from somebody, they weren't just going to teach you what they knew. You had to kind of become their apprentice, and there were lots of kind of like unspoken rules that you had to kind of abide by lest you be ousted by the community, I guess. And it seems like they intentionally made it really difficult to learn how to tattoo.
Yeah, they did. And a lot of that's rooted in some of the traditions of tattooing itself. But it's very, everyone holds their cards very close to their chest there, because if they learn how to do one really cool thing everyone wants to pay them for, and you learn how to do that same thing, they don't get paid as much.
Right.
That being said, I've been out of the industry for 5 years, so I don't know if it's still like that today. Yeah, it was always very, if you wanted to learn something from someone, you either had to end up working at the same shop next to them, or, you know, just get tattooed by them. That's, I guess, the one caveat, or not really a caveat, caveat's the wrong word. I can't think of the right word, but like,
exception.
Yeah. Yeah. The one exception was if you got tattooed by someone, you know, that was pretty much like a one-on-one seminar. But in some cases, you know, I look up to this super rad tattoo artist that's all the way across the U.S., I'm never going to get over there. So, yeah, it's the biggest thing I still struggle with it now is that in the developer community or the program community, whatever you want to call it, everyone is, like, so willing to jump in and help any and everyone. Like, I don't want to say at the drop of a dime, but, like, almost instantly, like they don't even expect anything back. It's just like, hey, I'm struggling with this. And they're like, oh, cool. Well, let me spend, you know, 30, 45 minutes and help you figure it out.
Right.
Whereas it was a big culture shock, because in tattooing, it was like, hey, you're doing a cool thing. I wish I knew how to do that. And they would just kind of give you the, well, good luck figuring it out, you know, stare.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand that, right? Like, if everyone's kind of competing for the same, there's only so many clients in tattooing, and there's probably more work to go around in the programming industry. And that's why we've maybe never have had experienced that before, where we need to keep it close to our chest. Otherwise we won't get money, or won't be able to have a job, or won't get be able to
yeah.
get clients. But yeah, I guess that was, you kind of jumped into what I was going to ask about. So, I mean, you talked about coming into the graphic design world, and we've obviously already mentioned that, you know, you worked at your previous company as a junior dev, and you're contracting for me as a junior dev.
Mm-hmm.
So how did that transition happen from design to code? Like, what brought you into the tech side of it, the coding side of it?
It was a couple of things. I remember specifically the last time I tattooed you before you moved to California, I got like a glimpse of your computer screen while we were taking a break. And yeah. I was like, is that what the backside of a website looks like? Or I didn't use backside. I don't remember what word I used, but you were like, yeah, this is it. You just type all this stuff and it does the thing.
Right.
So that kind of had me hooked there, but I didn't really know where to go or how to go about learning more about it. And I think this was probably 2011. So fast forward to 2015, when I was going through design school, I went to an online school for 16 months. And they had like an introductory I'm using air quotes, web design and development class, because it was HTML and CSS, but it was, I mean, even by 2015 standards, I ended up learning that a lot of the techniques they were teaching were already out of date. So that kind of like planted the seed in the back of my head. But outside of that class, outside of what I learned in that class, I didn't really know, again, how or where to go about learning more about it. So it just kind of, I think I was in your inbox a few times around then. Yeah, like that's kind of where it started, was there. I just didn't really know where to go from there to, you know, learn more about it.
Right. Yeah, I vaguely remember you asking me a couple of questions. I think you maybe tweeted at me. And I think now that I'm remembering it, I might have gotten back in touch with you through my brother, because he was streaming games on Twitch and you were also streaming on Twitch.
Yeah, and I think that is how we reconnected, because I messaged you on Facebook a couple times in 2015 about some web help. And then, like, I don't think we talked to each other till like, we didn't talk to each other at all till like February of last year.
So I'm not even sure how I got those messages, because I don't ever sign into Facebook or check my messages. It's a wasteland. So I don't even.
I must have just caught you on the lucky day.
Maybe, yeah. I might have been signing in for. The only reason I have Facebook right now is because of business accounts that I have to have. Like, for example, Design Collective has a page, and we have stuff there that I have to be a part of, which means I have to have an account. So I literally never check my messages. So
yeah, if it helps you date it any, I remember you'd help me with some web design stuff, and then like one of the last messages you sent me was, hey, check out this podcast I'm starting.
Oh, yeah. So that would have been like 3 years ago or something like that.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, so you and I think if I'm remembering correctly, so you were doing graphic design at a job, and they had a possible opening for a developer position, right? And you convinced them to let you transition over?
Yeah, so I had started, I had found free Codecamp and Codecademy, and I had done a few YouTube tutorial series on Bootstrap 3. I think it was Bootstrap 3. The dev tips tutorials from Travis Nielsen on YouTube from like 2017, 2018 were like my lifeline. Like I lived by those things. I've actually found myself within the last 6 months still reverting back to them to remember something. I'd kind of tinkered with that, and they were looking for a developer, but they have kind of a unique stack, or they're in a unique position where they have their own CMS that they bought from another company 10 years ago that was written in Cold Fusion, and they've just kind of been updating and iterating over it since.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, they have to hit the mark of an affordable Cold Fusion developer, which is, you know, a very tiny target in 2019, and I guess at this point in 2018. So what I did, I said, I was pretty much like in the back of my mind, or if I could envision it, what I was doing, I was standing there like waving my arms like, hey, pick me the entire time, because, you know, they were getting, you know, people that couldn't afford, people that were underqualified, people that weren't willing to work with Cold Fusion. And I'm just standing there with a giant sign that says, you know, I'll do whatever you want, just put me in the chair.
Right. Yeah, that's a huge asset to them, to have somebody like that that's willing to just wants to just learn and do the work. So, man, there's a bunch of questions I want to try and ask. So basically, I mean, one of the reasons why I asked you if you wanted to come on the show was, you know, obviously I enjoy talking to you, but I've been programming for a while, and so sometimes it's hard for me to kind of remember back to what it was like when I was, when concepts were like brand new, and so that's some of the stuff I wanted to talk to you about, was what's it like, I guess, learning in the last couple of years, because I feel like when I started picking things up, I was able to freelance doing WordPress themes, and that required me to know a basic amount of PHP, jQuery, and a little bit of CSS, and I was able to get by. But it feels like this in the last couple of years, it almost feels like you have to know about Node.js, you have to know about Webpack, you have to know about, like, even just to get in your foot in the door, right? It seems like you almost can't just start programming JavaScript, right? You have to learn about all these other tools that exist around it before you can even start.
Yeah, that's. I was actually on that note in 2015, 2016, somewhere in there. Shortly after I'd taken the class, I was like, "Yeah, I'm gonna become a web developer. I'm gonna figure this out." And like 2 months after that, I was pretty much just like, "You know what? This is too much. I'm walking away." And I really didn't touch it for like 12 solid months. Like I looked at the mountain I had to climb, and I was like, "I don't think I have the endurance for that." Which I've kind of mad at myself, but at the same time, that unexpected wait in the middle allowed for everything else to unfold the way it has. But the learning in 2018 and 2019, it was very, from the very beginning, I don't know why, but I was always like absolutely petrified of NPM or anything in that area. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. All I knew was I didn't know what it was. It sounds like a lot of stuff, so I'm just going to avoid it. So like the first 8 months of me taking development seriously was pretty much just HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, mostly in the free code camp curriculum. And although it's, you know, it's a JavaScript beginner's course, there's some projects on there that you have to do that actually, you know, I tapped you on a couple of them.
Yeah, so one of the things I struggle with, so it always feels like when someone comes to me and says, "Hey, I want to learn how to program, or I want to learn how to make websites," mm-hmm. In my mind, it feels more approachable. Like making websites feels more approachable than, say, like making iOS apps.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if that's necessarily true, because when you mention HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, those are three different languages with three different paradigms that you have to learn. And so the path that I've usually seen is people will jump into HTML and CSS and build sort of basic pages. And then they'll start working, like throwing JavaScript into the mix, which is a completely different paradigm, you know? So then they have to go from learning about, you know, HTML semantics, the different tags, you know. I mean, on top of that, like people will say HTML is a really simple language, and it is, but then you also have to learn about making layouts, right? You have to learn about CSS. You have to learn different techniques on mm-hmm. how do you make cards? How do you know, like, what's Flexbox? What does Float do? You know? And so I spent a long time, like a large part of my development career was actually just writing HTML and CSS and sprinkling jQuery in here and there.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what I had to learn, a lot of the difficult, like early problems I had to solve were actually translating designs from designers into HTML and CSS. And so I had to learn about a lot of different techniques for layouts. I mean, when I started, we didn't even have rounded corners. You had to use images to do that, you know? So that in itself was a pretty big challenge. And then you throw on JavaScript, which mm-hmm. is a different paradigm, right? It's more classical style computer science stuff, right? So you're having to learn about functions and you're having to learn about variables and scopes, and you have to learn about you know, like MapReduce and filter and things like that. So it all piles on really quickly. But from my side of things, I'm like, oh yeah, learning how to build a website's quote unquote easy, right? And I think mm-hmm. that's one word I'm trying to use less, because if I'm communicating to you and I say, oh, this should be easy, but it's not for you, I think that's really discouraging. It almost does more harm than good, right? So
mm-hmm.
I can only imagine what it is like now. So like you're saying, there's NPM, you know, so a package manager. So I feel like when you go and look at a tutorial about learning how to make a basic website, they're like, oh yeah, install NPM and then install all these things. And you might copy and paste it, but that does nothing to help you debug issues, right? So
yeah, and a year ago, I would just stop those tutorials. If they went, and you just install, I would hit pause and find another one.
Right.
Which on the inverse side of that it kind of helped because I was doing everything with, you know, vanilla everything, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of forced me to learn more about, I guess, the core language itself rather than, you know, these frameworks or extractions that are on top of it.
Right. Yeah.
Which I think it's back then it seemed like I was never going to get anywhere, but now looking back on it, it's been a huge. Me being terrified of NPM was a huge help in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, again, I don't know if it's using terminology like easy or simple, or hey, you can stand up a website by just using these three tools, you know.
Yeah.
But that it's a lot. Like any way you look at it, it's a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you start looking at if you're wanting to, you know, build an application. I think that's a whole nother level on top of it. But yeah, so I guess you already mentioned that I guess what I can extrapolate from what you mentioned was that one strategy that worked for you was to look for the more minimalistic things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look for the things that the tutorials or the articles or the videos or whatever that didn't just gloss over, oh, install all these other dependencies that do these things for you that you have no idea how they work, right? You kind of skipped over that.
Yeah.
Try to get it as simple as possible. I think generally that's the best way to learn something. So I guess I can kind of relate that experience to when I was learning how to make Ruby and Rails apps. Ruby on Rails, all the verbiage around Rails was, oh yeah, you can make a blog in 20 minutes, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you can, but there's a lot of magic and there's a lot of stuff that it extrapolates away from you that once you get into things, it can be really difficult to sign your way around. And so that was my biggest struggle was I could follow a tutorial and I could get something stood up.
Yeah.
But when it came to debugging a problem or understanding what was actually going wrong, that was a whole different story. And that was really discouraging to me for a long time. So I would follow a post about adding some feature to a Rails app and it didn't work quite right. And I would just get stuck because I had never learned how to read a stack trace. I had never learned how to sort of read between the lines. And I think when you see a stack trace or something like that, a seasoned developer can kind of like see around that or see into it. Like they're not so blindsided, maybe is the right word mm-hmm. for that. They're not so blindsided by an error. They can kind of like dissect it into smaller pieces and find what's wrong. But for me, when I was learning, an error would happen or something would happen and all I could see was a big error and I couldn't really like zoom in and take it apart, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's still a part I kind of struggle with. I see red in the terminal and I'm like,
yeah.
Dear God, where do I go from now?
Yeah. So that's interesting. So how was your experience as a junior developer at your first gig? You told me a little bit, you've grown a little bit, but what was the experience like jumping in? And maybe a follow-up question I can ask to that was, or is there something that a manager or a leader did that helped keep you motivated, helped keep you encouraged and excited about what you were doing?
There is, but I don't, well, the creative director I worked under at Third Wave, he was always super supportive of anything I wanted to do. But I think the biggest thing that kept me motivated was a few months after I got into the junior developer role there, the senior developer actually had a pretty debilitating injury to where he was out of the office for 3 solid months. And when I left the job 4 weeks ago, he was still only in part time.
Hmm.
So there was pretty much every opportunity in the world for, me to be extremely motivated because, you know, I guess the deadlines kind of required it, which is, it worked out well because before, I mean, obviously it's extremely horrible that he suffered the injury, but the months before that I had kind of gotten complacent in that, you know, I was in the role and I was like, oh, I don't know how to do this. I'll wait for him to teach me. I don't know how to do this. I'll wait for him to teach me.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was one thing he was always very adamant about was he wanted to show me the right way he would do it rather than, you know, me learning a bad practice and him having to walk me back. So, you know, in my mind, I was like, you know, I'm just honoring his request and not learning a bad practice. But then when his injury happened, it was kind of like, okay, Drew, you're all we have now. You have to step up. So,
right.
So, which, I mean,
you can put in the hot seat.
So, my creative director, well, I guess I technically wasn't working under him as the creative director, but he was also a partner in the business, so I still worked under him.
Mm-hmm.
But the entire time he was like, hey, you know, it's bad that we're in this position, but I have every ounce of faith I can muster in you to finish this project. And he had already been with the company for 17 years. So for someone that had been invested with the company for that long to look at me and say, I can place everything I've worked 17 years on in you, was, I mean, that in itself was extremely motivating.
Right. I mean, that just the trust there, right? It feels good to be trusted by somebody.
Yeah, because during that time, it's not like he was sticking his head in my office like every 5 minutes, like, hey, are you doing your job? Hey, are you doing your job? He'd come in like once on a Monday and be like, hey, this is what we're working on. I need you this far by Friday. See you next Monday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds a lot like Lindsay, my boss right now, Lindsay, what she does. We'll catch up, but there's not any sort of micromanagement happening there, which makes my job a lot easier.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. So have there been any maybe habits or skills that you've learned from tattooing or design or any other fields that have come into play or help you learn and stick to programming?
I would probably say the self-hustle, because with tattooing, the shop you work at's not necessarily obligated to promote you or try to bring you business. That's all incumbent on you.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of artists, you know, I don't want to say live or die by their Instagram, but I know there's probably a fair few in the industry that's where, you know, their uptick in income started, and that's probably what they still live off of. So when it came to web development, I kind of had that same mentality when it came to picking up freelance projects.
Mm-hmm.
But even if it wasn't freelance projects, it was, you know, I know no one else is going to do this for me, and so I have to put myself through these courses. I have to, you know, set aside this time to learn these new things because I know it's going to better me and my chances in the future.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like tattooing. You're always on the lookout for a new technique or a new style or something that can give you an edge, right?
Yep.
It feels like programming is the same way. You're kind of always having to look out for new ways of doing things, new techniques, new libraries, and all that stuff. So I could definitely see how that would correlate.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's just that especially when you're not coming from a traditional, you know, I went to 4 years of school, or, you know, I have a CS degree. When you're teaching yourself, there's no one's going to make you go through the YouTube tutorials. No one's going to make you buy the Level Up Tutorials course or the West Boss course or any of those guys. It's either on you to do it yourself and get where you want to be, or it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Hey, that's helping me out right now. So has it always been web? Have you ever been interested in other technologies, or like back-end technologies, or like iOS apps, or any embedded technologies?
I've always had an interest in iOS app development. I don't know why, other than probably because I use an iPhone all the time. I'm like, oh, it'd be cool to build something that's on this. So, I mean, it hasn't always been web. I'm very quick to stretch myself too thin. And these last few months, I've been really making an effort to make sure I don't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's because, especially if I have a few friends that are interested in web development or learning programming in some fashion, and I tell them up front, like, I'm in no position to teach you anything, but if you're seriously interested, let me know. So, like, but before I'm even, you know, that far along, I'm already turning around and saying, hey, let me help you first.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of good, though, because you're more intimately familiar with what they're going through, right? So
yeah.
I've worked with developers in the past where I had trouble learning from them because they were so advanced that they had trouble communicating to me in a simple fashion, right? So to them, a problem was easy, and they're like, oh, you just do this and this. But there was actually maybe 10 steps between this and this, right?
And so
I had to go along and put those together myself, which was really difficult. And it was hard for me to kind of learn how to do that. But I can imagine, you know, talking to someone that has more recently learned something, it'd be easier for them to kind of break the problem down into smaller steps and understand how you got stuck on something, or understand why something wouldn't make sense, and how to help you make it make sense.
Yeah, and that's one thing I ran into with my previous job was the senior developer had been, you know, a ColdFusion aficionado for, I think, 14 years at that point. So what in his mind was, oh, you just do it this way, was to me, you know, I've never seen that at all. I wouldn't even end up here if you gave me 2 years to study it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It can be really intimidating to kind of deal with that too. But I guess really like the persistence that you have, I guess, right? Like just keep mm-hmm. coming back. No one's going to do this for you. No one can do it for you.
Yeah.
It really kind of like, eventually you'll get through it. It's just really frustrating to have to walk through that. Cause I'm remembering a lot of that stuff now when I was first learning how to do full stack dev or building web apps and stuff. It was really, really difficult for me to sort through that. And so I also remember something that you would always say to me, you know, over the last year was, and you mentioned a few times this episode, but you mentioned you were very adamant about working with JavaScript before you picked a framework like React or Vue or similar. You're very, very adamant about, no, I need to learn JavaScript first. Mm-hmm. I need to learn JavaScript first. And I thought that was really awesome because that's something that I learned the hard way with Rails. So I jumped into Rails without really knowing much Ruby at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it made things really difficult because I couldn't separate the two. I couldn't figure out what was Rails doing for me and what is just Ruby the language. And when I jumped into Elixir and Phoenix, granted Phoenix is a lot, it does a lot less for you than Rails does. The distinction there, I had been writing Elixir for a little bit and understood the language a lot better than I did Ruby when I jumped into each respective framework, and it helped me out a lot. But mm-hmm. that was one thing that I always thought was awesome was you were very adamant about doing things as vanilla as you could. And I think that probably helped you a lot. But when it came time to, I guess, look at a framework, does it kind of feel like you kind of have to do that, I guess, in like looking at jobs? If you're looking at web, it seems like it's either React or you basically are required to know a framework these days, right?
In my experience, almost exclusively, yes. Because I would look through the job boards and I'd be like, HTML, check. CSS, check. React. All right. Okay. Next listing, HTML, check. CSS, check. Angular, not quite.
Right.
And it was just that over and over and over. So finally, I think it was actually, so this time last year, I was building my quote, air quote again, portfolio site with static HTML and CSS, which there's nothing wrong with that. If it's a small site,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's no need for a giant framework. And I had like two lines of JavaScript that would like toggle the mobile navigation open and close. And like, I thought I was like, you know, Zuckerberg all over again when I did that. And I actually sure. had it working the right way. But then I don't remember what exactly happened. It was probably just me getting frustrated at looking at job listings and seeing HTML, CSS, framework A, HTML, CSS, framework B. So I think it was in like November, maybe. I was finally just like, I probably didn't do it in the right order, but like I just did like an NPM install of Vue, and I tinkered for like a day, and then somehow ended up building something in React a week later. So I don't know how that happened, because I was like all in on Vue, and then next thing I know, I'm doing a React tutorial. But
I remember specifically why that happened, actually, because you were talking to me.
Oh, yeah?
And you were asking, I think you were asking me about like which one would you pick, or you asked me like which one would I pick, which one would you do, why? And then my question was, if you're just looking for a job, there are many more React jobs, and that's the biggest framework out right now.
I do remember that.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. So you went that way. What was that like? Was it like learning? Was it like starting fresh all over again, or was it different because you had some of the basics of JavaScript under your belt?
It was like learning fresh all over again, but there was like this. I don't know, there's like this feeling of nirvana the entire time. Like, oh wow, like I'm learning this new stuff, but I don't have to write every single line to make it do this one thing. Now I can just write these one or two lines and the magic does it for me.
Right.
So yeah, that's, and even now that I'm diving into Nuxt, it's, you know, rinse and repeat.
So it's like you went from the Stone Age to the Bronze Age or something.
Yeah, pretty much. Because my biggest frustration when I was anti-NPM, strictly out of fear, you know, nothing against NPM itself. I just was terrified of it for no inexplicable reason.
It was good reason.
But my biggest frustration with JavaScript is like, why it would take me, you know, it takes me all of this to do this one thing. Why is it this difficult? Which, you know, I have a better understanding of why that is now that I've worked in JavaScript in an actual real world application some more. But then when I jumped into React and I jumped into Vue, it was just kind of like, oh, all this stuff I've spent like 6 months banging my head against the keyboard about makes more sense, but I can do them all much easier. It was just, if I could relive those first few months of the first time jumping into React and Vue, I would probably do it a couple more times just for the experience.
Right. So you went with React for a little bit, and then you switched back to Vue because we were talking, and I had mentioned that I had some work coming up that I needed somebody to work on, and we specifically use Vue at DK. So you're like, all right, I'll jump into Vue for a while. And so you started doing that. I guess on the side, like, you have this project that you're working on. And I think this is something I always recommend to people is find something. It doesn't have to be like a new novel idea, but just in a side project that you can apply the programming learnings to, because whenever I learned something, it actually stuck. The only time it stuck was when I was actually using it in a project I was building, because I would go through Rails tutorials after Rails tutorials after Rails tutorials, and it would just never stick until I got assigned a project that I had to build. And they're like, you have to do this in 4 months. And I was like, oh shoot. That's when it actually stuck in my mind. but basically you like picked out this project that you're kind of excited about. And I think the excitement is what helps make that stuff stick, because it's like before you're learning a tool just to learn a tool, but now you're learning a tool and it's a means to an end, right?
Yeah.
So like the motivation for me is what was different there. So you're building the side project. How has that been? Because I think you've rebuilt it a couple of times. Like, you built the first version and then you're like, I can do better. And so you started working on the second version. But what's the learning experience been like there?
I don't know. Without sounding cliche, it's been kind of like a mind altering experience every time I go to rebuild it or change something. So the project started out as the React tutorial they send you through. I think it's like a tic-tac-toe game. So it started out as that, and then I decided I was going to build a React to-do list because, you know, I'm so original. But then I started thinking, like, what can I do to make this a little bit better? So I was like, okay, I'm going to make it a to-do list that will filter by priority. And I had like all these things in my head that was going to make it so awesome. And then I found out that Todoist is a thing. And I was like, well, they definitely beat me to market.
Right.
But somewhere along the way, like the idea of a to-do list or the basic functionality of a to-do list and the fact that every job I had applied for wanted some form of experience, even for the most junior positions. But as a junior, there's no way for you to get that experience. Like the, what's the joke that's going around Twitter now? It's like,
right,
oh yeah, junior dev, 10 years experience. So I came up with this idea that I was just going to, it was just going to be kind of like a to-do list of GitHub projects posted by senior developers who were willing to pair with someone junior to them, so that they could teach them some along the way, you know, scratch something off their to-do list. And, you know, both parties kind of benefit from it. And it, like I said, it started out as the React tutorial. And then from there, it kind of morphed into the to-do list idea. And it was going fairly well. I actually launched it. I have a Twitter for it. It's actually live. But the React version of it, because it started out as a, you know, just getting started tutorial, there were a bunch of, I guess, foundational cracks between the routing and, you know, a bunch of the smaller stuff you have to set up for React.
Yeah. So basically when you set out to build a single page application, you have to redo a lot of the work that server-side apps kind of get
mm-hmm.
out of the box, right? Like things like the back button, for example.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, you know? And I remember those were some of the things that you're getting caught up on, were things that weren't going to be obvious to someone who hadn't done that before.
Yeah, the back button was my first React bug I ever ran into.
Yeah, you're like, why is this page, why is this not working? It's like, well, here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, that, to, what was awesome, because like, hearing you describe it, like mentioning like, oh, this job requires X amount of experience. In my book, that's experience, like building an app, and these are that's the sort of knowledge that you get that I think that those jobs want you to have, right?
Yeah.
And so you building that web app like that, and you're still working on it. I think now that it's in, you're doing it in Nuxt and all that. But I think like you building those things is giving you valuable experience, in the same way that, you know, me making a Rails app on the side gave me valuable experience in how to build that app. But yeah, it's kind of a bummer. I mean, that's why when Lindsay and I were talking about it, we were talking about, because after Paul had left DK, we were looking at like what does the engineering team look like, you know? And one thing that she had mentioned to me years ago is that she, when we originally were talking, when I first started at DK, I mentioned like, yeah, I'd love to do an engineering blog and share our learnings and share information. And she was excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I mentioned too, like, you know, people gave me a shot when I probably didn't deserve it. So I would love to be able to do that at someday too, is hire some junior developers and help them learn and grow into a full-time position. And, you know, fast forward 3 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought it back up and she was like, yeah, let's do it. You know, there wasn't even a hesitation. There wasn't even a, is it going to be efficient? Is it going to, you know, it was like, yeah, let's get him on board. Let's get him learning. Let's teach him and bring him up, you know? So yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's why I'm so quick to turn around and help others. If, you know, if someone were to come to me and say, hey, I need some help, I think that's one reason I'd be so quick to turn around and help, is because I'm very aware of the fact that I'm only as far as I've gotten because of everyone who has turned around and, you know, extended a helping hand along the way. Like, I mean, I know I pretty much live in your inbox. Mikhail's sure. helped me out a lot. I met a guy through Twitter, Joe Previtt. I think his Twitter handle is at JSJoeIO. He's helped me out a lot. And it's you know, those last two names on the list, you know, they didn't even know me at all, other than the fact that I was someone junior to them wanting to learn something, and that's all it took for them to be willing to help. So I think that's one reason I'm so quick to, you know, turn around and send it down.
Yeah. So I another question I have for you is there something that senior devs or more experienced devs do that is intimidating to junior developers, or make you feel like you can't approach us?
That make you feel unapproachable?
Yeah.
I mean, I think just the I guess from my perspective, the speed and the ease of which senior developers just get stuff done is, it's motivating and intimidating at the same time. Again, my friend of mine from Twitter, Joe Previtt, he, like 2 months ago, he was talking about this learning to code web app he was building. And then just last week, he's talking about this online, co-working space that is, you know, almost completely done. And, you know, I'm over here like kicking myself in the ankle because it's taking me 8 months to build the most generic CRUD app ever.
Mm.
And he's standing up an entire digital co-working space. So I think, but again, I don't think it's anything that the senior developers intentionally do. I think it's just, it's the difference between where they're at to where I'm at.
Well, I guess that happens to me too, because on the episode where we were talking to a friend of the show, Brian Joseph,
mm-hmm.
he was talking about Kubernetes. And I mentioned how intimidating it was to me, and he was like, well, that's that dude's sole job, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, I don't know if there's a way to escape that imposter syndrome stuff, but yeah, I mean, that was part of some of the questions I wanted to ask you, was like, how can we as senior developers be more approachable, How can we be more accessible to people that want to learn and want to level themselves up? And specifically, I asked that because that's what happened with me, right? So, you know, meeting Paul through an old roommate and him just answering my question. We used to talk on Skype all day. Actually, this was back around. So I was still in REST at that point, and I was making WordPress apps. Or themes, and Paul would just talk to me on Skype all day long and answer my questions. And fast forward to another friend, Grant Blakeman, he would answer my Ruby questions all the time. And fast forward to the Elixir Slack, Rockwell was helping my poor soul out answering Elixir questions and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I've got to where I am. And I mean, granted, I'm stubborn and persistent, right? So I'm stubborn in that I don't give up when I get stumped on something.
Yeah.
I keep attacking it. I think like music helped me with that. I think there's a bunch of stuff in my life that helped me with that. Like wrestling taught me a lot. Like I think there was a lot that I learned in that one-on-one competition because I had played team sports all through high school and I started wrestling in the 10th grade. So up until that point, I had teammates to help me out, right?
Yeah.
And then you get into wrestling, it's one-on-one. There's no one. When you get on the mat, there's nobody else. Mm-hmm. It's you versus the other person, you know? So I think I learned a lot through that. And, you know, in music or like learning guitar, right? There's a certain persistence that you have to have to get through. Like maybe your brain can think about the notes, but your fingers can't move as fast as your head. Like that was really frustrating for me for a long time.
That's still really frustrating to me.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a rhythm guitarist by genetics.
Yeah, so programming is, there's a lot of parallels to that, and there's this level of persistence that you just kind of have to learn how to. And it's not that some people will say some people have it, some people don't, but I don't think that's true. I think it's something that's learned.
Mm-hmm.
And that's helped me a lot, but yeah, I don't know, man. It's been cool to see to see you kind of grow. Like I've known you for a long time now, and to see you kind of like move through different ranks and see you set goals and working on achieving those goals, I think is really cool. So, maybe my last question for you is, you know, where do you see yourself in five years or 10 years in technology?
Let's see. I don't know. Maybe, you know, at that point, a senior developer more focused on the product end.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what I've done so far is, you know, I've rebuilt my portfolio 10 billion times over. I've built a couple of one-off sites for some family friends here and there. But the product development end is really, it's really interesting to me to be able to really just sink your teeth into one thing for a long time. So that's kind of where I would like to end up is, you know, in a couple of years, maybe not specifically on something I built myself. I know the chances of a junior developer coming up with an idea that sustains itself is, you know, so minute, but in some capacity, just working on a product.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly think that the chances of a junior dev coming up with something that is useful to people and something that people would pay for is maybe even sometimes greater than a seasoned dev, because a seasoned dev can sometimes get so used to how things currently work,
mm-hmm.
and how things are currently operating. You know, they kind of get stuck in our ways, like stuck in our tool sets, stuck in designing a certain way, stuck in building an application to function a certain way, that sometimes it can be hard to see around it and learn a better way of doing things, you know? And so that's something that I'm always trying to do is there a better way to do this? And I'm constantly trying to slow down a little bit. So I wouldn't be so fast to say that, you know, cold XP won't take off or another idea you have might not take off. I mean, I think that's certainly possible, but.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, sorry, this is a random tangent. If cold XP pairs one junior to one senior and that one junior learns anything from their interaction, it's a success a million times over in my book.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, that's this paying, you know, paying it forward, I suppose.
Yeah.
Like you said earlier. So, I guess my last question is I had it and I'm losing it.
it's right there. Just grab it.
Yeah. So I guess my last question is maybe the one thing that all of us listening can do, to put ourselves out there, to make ourselves more approachable? Was it like, what made you feel like you were okay to message me that first time and ask me a question?
Well, I think this is going to be a two-part answer. I was comfortable with messaging you for help because we had the history with music. I think what made me feel comfortable approaching people I didn't know at all across Twitter was one of my first interactions on Twitter was that I had ran into a trouble on one of Wes Boss's courses, and I just kind of, it was kind of a tweet in frustration that I didn't expect to get noticed, but he actually responded to it and said, you know, hey, send me the code. Well, I don't forget the exact interaction, but he himself actually responded back to it. So that was maybe a year ago at this point. So, you know, I'm still brand new into everything. And here's this guy that, you know, runs this super successful tutorial business responding to me directly. If someone of that stature, which I know he probably wouldn't consider himself of any stature, but if someone that's been that successful in the industry is willing to respond to someone as small as me, then that just gave me maybe a little more confidence to reach out to other people.
Gotcha. So just be more vocal, I guess, right?
Yeah. And there's probably like a more elegant way to word that.
Well, I mean, I think I got the point. So
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, is there anything else you want to plug? I mean, you got Colt XP. I think it's coltxp.com, right?
Yeah. It's coltxp.com. Don't judge me by it because it's me learning Nuxt and how to build things along the way.
Sure.
So it technically works right now, but there's still a lot of infrastructure I need to build into it. But I mean, like a year ago, I was learning how to toggle on mobile navigation and with vanilla JavaScript. And last night, I was looking up how to handle Firestore functions for when something happens on the back end. So if anyone of the junior level is listening, no, it doesn't take that long to get leaps and bounds ahead.
Yeah, that's a pretty big pretty big thing. Sometimes I wonder if I would struggle right now with building a nice popover navigation or something like that.
Yeah,
because I spend so much time on the back end. But no, that's awesome. Well, I guess if any juniors are listening, feel free to reach out to me, to Drew, to Rockwell, to anybody. Just love any feedback that you might have. Again, another shout out to, I think I shouted him out last episode, but shout out to our friend Dan that makes the library PAL, the authentication library PAL for Elixir. We actually were chatting for about an hour before recording the show. He was helping me learn more about the library and answering my questions on Slack or on Discord. So very thankful for that. Yeah, so awesome.
See, that's just the developer community. It gives back to itself and grows exponentially.
Right, yeah. So people have been asking for an article on how to set up an EctoDB store, which will mean nothing to you probably, or anybody that's not familiar with Elixir. But so yeah, I needed that, so I'm building it and I'm gonna contribute it to him, you know, so hopefully he can use that to help other people. But yeah, so he was answering my questions earlier for about an hour, which was awesome. But yeah, so shout out to him and for helping me out and helping me learn more about. I've been learning a lot about Elixir just by looking through that library. So, but yeah, we love to hear from everybody. We love feedback. I appreciate shares and comments and tweets and all that good stuff. You can tweet at the show at dnc.show or dncshow on Twitter. I'm at Sean Washbot and Shrockwell is at Shrockwell, SCH, because I always spell it wrong without the C. And what's your Twitter handle, Drew?
It's Drew Clem Create. So Drew Clem CR8, because it's 1997 and I'm cool like that.
It's tough out there to get a handle.
I know, right? I've tried so many different things.
Yeah. As always, show notes are going to be available at dnc.show. So all the links and the Twitter handles we talked about today are going to be there. We have other discussions available at spectrum.chat. So every week, Mikhail takes the show notes and puts them on spectrum.chat and people ask questions and we respond there. And thanks, as always, to Spec for having us and editing our shows and just being there for us. I don't know that I'd be able to continue putting out a podcast if they weren't helping us out. So thanks to them. If you're into other design and developer-related podcasts, head on over to spec.fm and check them out. This week's episode was edited by Mikhail Delport and produced by Sarah Jackson. Well, do you have any closing words of wisdom for other junior developers out there?
Closing words of wisdom? Junior developers, help me build Colt. I don't know what I'm doing.
That's what I would have said too. Help me build Design Collective because I don't know what I'm doing.
But seriously, if there's anyone new to Nuxt or new to programming in general and you want to jump in on something that may potentially at some point 10 years down the road when someone else builds it better than me, have some market value, help me build this thing. It's fun, if nothing else.
That's awesome, man. Well, I'm glad that you're able to be on the show, and I'm sure it won't be the last time. So
yeah, I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, I'll talk to you later.
Later.